One Man's Family, brought to you by the makers of Chasin' Sanborn Coffee and Bluebonnet Margarine. One Man's Family is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and their bewildering offspring. Today we present Chapter 6, Book 66, entitled Father Barber's Dead Tooth. When dawn came this morning, the atmosphere over San Francisco was crystal clear, and the first rays of sun colored the city with glitter and sparkle so that it stood on its hilltops with a kind of oriental splendor. And then at 9 o'clock, thunderheads swept in from the ocean, and at 10, drops of rain the size of quarters splattered on the streets, and after that there was such a downpour as San Francisco seldom sees, certainly not in May. And this was the day that Nicholas and Claudia had had Nicolette Moore in for lunch. They came out on the porch for a moment's airing after lunch, and this is what they found.
Nicky, did you ever see it rain like this?
I say, Miss Moore, I'm going to have to return you to Father and Mother Barbara in a rubber boat.
Oh, you have a rubber boat?
Well, not right at the moment, but I'm very ingenious with an old boot and a piece of string.
Oh, so? Oh, I've had enough. Let's go back inside.
Yes, this is one of the wettest storms I've come across recently.
All right, inside with you. That's it.
Come on in the den, Nicolette. On days like this, the fireplace is very attractive.
Ah, yes, I like this room.
I say, you do? Claudia and I spend a great deal of time in here.
I should think so.
Here, curl up in this.
Oh, but you...
Oh, not at all, not at all. I like this long chair where I can stretch out my legs and rest the full length of me.
Sure, he always sits there. And I usually find a nest here on the Davenport, so that chair's all yours.
Ah, a beautiful lunch. Now a beautiful chair before a beautiful fire in which to digest it.
You know, Miss Moore, Nicolette, you remind me of some part of the East.
The East?
Some part of the country, some city. You know, I was there a good deal right after the First World War, before I married Claudia.
Oh? I didn't know that.
I was in India, spent some time in China, some in Burma. And for almost 2 years, I was in Outer Mongolia, Manchuria, other out-of-the-way places.
That's when he was still in the British Army.
And on your travels, you found a place or a people which now you recall because of me?
Isn't it irritating when something lies just below your consciousness? You're quite aware it's there, but you can't bring it to light.
Well, I'm afraid I cannot help you, because my background was wholly Middle European. Of course, the Mongol horde invaded Middle Europe over and over all through history, like a river flooding its banks. So who knows? There might very well be Mongol or Tartar or something of that orient in my ancestry.
Isn't it wonderful the way nature has of mixing bloodlines?
Quite. We call America the melting pot. The war is the true melting pot. Just imagine the mixture of racial bloodlines which have come out of this last war.
Oh, yes. How do you mean, Vicky?
All these American, British, South African, Australian troops in Europe, Northern Africa, all through the Orient. Ah, yes. Bloodlines, national characteristics, whatever pure strains left in this world, be mixed up in World War Number 2 in the greatest of all melting pots.
And a good thing, too.
You mean wherever an army goes?
Ah, such naivety. Claudia, my dear, wherever any army goes, it sows the seed of its national characteristics. It leaves behind a harvest that will show in the faces of the people for generations.
Oh, Nicky, that sounds like something out of the old barbarous days. Is that true, Nicolette?
Well, war is war. And women have always been the fairest game.
In the old days, yes.
Has the nature of men changed so much? You ask any man who has been a soldier in a foreign land, what are the real spoils of war?
Women? Girls?
That's awful.
Oh, my dear, you were in a German concentration camp for almost 2 years.
Oh, I know, but that was isolated. Nazi brutality.
Worse, perhaps. But women's lot has never been a happy one in any invasion. And then there is another side of the story, too. You must not forget that in the excitement of war, in the terrible confusion, when all law and order goes out the window, the women lose their heads also.
Women consent, condone.
What have they to lose? Their country is lost. Their men are scattered. They're going to need food and protection. What better way than to fasten on to the victors? Oh, yes, the men may be the aggressors, But the women make a very pretty picture of coming to terms in a hurry.
I say, how did we get on this subject?
Yes, how did we? We were talking about bloodlines and how they got mixed up. It's a terribly fascinating subject. You read in history how Genghis Khan invaded China, how the hordes from the north invaded Rome. That's just words. Until you think of the individual men and women, what happened to them?
Yes, the word war is a terribly fascinating word. It always has been and always will be. Until you think of the individual.
Queer how unimportant the individual person is in history. Leaders, yes, but you and I and the chap across the street go down the drain of time like so much street sweepings.
Nicky, that's awful. But I hate being swept down the drain of time like so much street sweepings. It gives a girl an inferiority complex.
Well, not very much in this life to give the average person reason for self-pride.
Well, not self-pride, no, but self-respect. There's plenty of room for that.
Yes, you would say that.
Why me, especially?
Because you're that sort of a person, if I read you correctly. Mm. A young woman who has no false pride, but who considers her self-respect above all else.
That's true, Nicolette. I wouldn't have put it in exactly the words Nicky did, but that's what typifies you. A woman of integrity. Someone who holds her ideals high in the breeze for everyone to see.
Wouldn't it does it show that much?
Like an underskirt with a broken shoulder strap. Hello. Isn't that our front door?
Door? I doubt it on a day like this.
Say, is there someone in the hall?
It's me, Uncle Nicky. I'm taking off my rain thing.
Is that you, Margaret?
Yes, it's Margaret. I'm taking off my raincoat and rubber.
What are you doing out in this kind of weather?
There, I'm coming.
But Margaret is the busiest little girl for her age in all America.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. Oh, hello, Miss Moore.
Well, you don't look the least bit waterlogged.
Dry as a stick.
Oh, sure. Dad made me put on my rain things. Where's Penny and Skippy at, Claudia? Oh,
they're up in the upstairs sitting room.
May I go up?
Well, I expect you may.
Okay. Isn't Uncle Paul over here?
No, what?
Oh, I just wondered.
Must have had a reason to wonder, didn't you?
Well, Miss Moore's over here.
Oh?
And if you're going to marry Uncle Paul, I should think he'd be every place you are.
Why, Margaret.
Hello. Out of the mouth of the babe.
And who, may I ask, gave you the impression that I was marrying your Uncle Paul?
But everybody knows that.
Oh, they do?
Well, the kids do.
Well, Margaret, the next time the children say any such thing, you tell them you have information from the horse's mouth.
The horse's mouth?
Yes, you tell them that Miss Moore told you personally that there is not one word of truth in the rumor.
You're not going to marry Uncle Paul?
Uh-huh, so you want to pin me down.
Well, either you are or you aren't.
I say, Margaret, old girl, aren't we pressing a little hard?
But all I wanted to know was whether...
Well, that's all there is to it. There's not a word of truth in the rumors. Just say that. We'll take care of everything.
Okay.
Now, you run on up and see Penelope and Skippy.
Okay. Bye. Don't worry about me. I'll tell them there's not a word of truth in the room.
But these children, how they do dig after the truth?
Information of any cost.
I'm sorry, Nicolette.
Well, what is there to be sorry about? My relationship with Paul is an open book. Paul will never hurt me, and I will never hurt Paul. What other people say or think is a small matter.
I think you have something there.
Well, all I can say is, if he doesn't marry, he's a bigger dope than I think he is.
How nice.
In fact, if Paul doesn't take you as a wife, I think the whole family will adopt you anyway.
Oh, no, not adoption. But I thank the Barbers for the kind thought anyway.
Yes, I... Oh, hello, Margaret. Are you down already again?
Yes, thank you. I took care of everything.
What?
She's leaving. She took care of everything.
Well, aren't you going to stay and play with Penny and Skippy?
No, thank you. I just came over to tell Skippy something. Now I'm going back home.
It must have been very important to bring you out in this weather.
It was. I got my rubbers and raincoat on, so I gotta go now.
But what was the important message?
That Uncle Paul is going to marry Miss Moore. Only there's not a word of truth in the rumor.
What did you say?
I came over to tell Skippy you were going to marry Paul, but there's not a word of truth in the rumor.
Well, I am a son, you is anyway. a subject for conversation.
Well, you're much more than that to the Barbers. This clan takes an interest only in those whom they appreciate. You're very well thought of, Miss Moore.
And whom the Barbers love, they devour with their curiosity.
Quite.
It's a family trait handed down from generation to generation. In fact, there are times when we've been known as the nosy Barbers.
Oh, really?
Oh, but it's a kindly curiosity. It's complimentary, actually. If the family likes someone, they want to share everything. Oh, certainly, it gets a bit thick sometimes, as it does in all families. But believe me, Nicolette, you gain much more than you lose by being a barber.
I have no fear. The Barbers are people I understand. I could live with them forever on the best of terms.
With your meals, enjoy this new coffee sensation. Between meals, too, just taste the improvement. It's the new blend of Chase and Sanborn, a new thrill in your coffee cup. New blend means a different combination of finer, richer coffees that multiplies the flavor, multiplies your enjoyment. Our expert coffee tasters are constantly testing fine coffees from all over the world and choosing the most delicious. They put this new combination together, inspired by the coffees themselves. It was a stroke of sheer blending genius, giving you the most satisfying coffee you ever tasted. Taste it. You get the new Chase and Sanborn at its best and freshest, vacuum packed as soon as it's perfectly roasted. No other container in the world can give you so much flavor, so much freshness. Don't miss out. Coffee so delicious is an event in any person's lifetime. Enjoy it the first chance you get. Every bit of Chase and Sanborn your grocer has is this superb new blend. Ask for Chase and Sanborn, the new coffee sensation. And down the other way from the family home is the Hazel and Daniel residence. The twin sons of the house are quite at home. Pinky on the back of his neck on the sofa, Hank's long legs sprawled out over half the living room floor from the easy chair before the fire.
Oh, Hank! Pinky!
That's Mom calling.
Yeah, I know.
You boys, don't you hear me?
You calling somebody, Mom?
I'm calling you.
You want Hank, too?
Hey, why'd you have to bring me into it?
Mom, you calling Hank, too?
I'm calling you both. You both came home from school and threw your soggy school clothes helter-skelter. And I want you to come upstairs and pick them up.
Oh, I took mine off in the bathroom.
I know you did and left them there.
Okay, we'll be up.
Well, I should think so.
I'll match you to see who goes up and picks up all the clothes.
Okay.
Lend me a quarter.
Hey.
Well, you want a match, don't you?
Use your own money.
I haven't got any.
Where's your allowance?
Oh, that was gone 2 nights ago.
Huh? Well, what'd you do with it? How'd you spend it?
On women.
Who?
Women. You know, those things with lipstick and dresses.
Oh, you're talking about Joan and Mary Wells and those kids at school.
Well, they're women, aren't they?
Ah, who's so smart?
Huh? What are you talking about?
You're supposed to be so smart, and yet you let a bunch of high school girls spend all your money.
You gotta spend money on girls.
I don't.
Yeah, and look how many girls you've got.
I only want one.
Huh. Linda Summers.
Okay. Who's got all the money? Who's got the girl he wants and all the money?
Well, are we gonna match or not?
Sure.
Then lend me a quarter.
Nothing doing.
All right, a dime then.
Jump in the lake. Here's a penny.
You sure you can spare it?
Okay. 2 out of 3. I'm matching you.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Okay, that's one for me. Once more, and you go up and place the wet clothes.
You're matching me.
Sure.
You didn't do it. That evens us up.
Okay, you match me this time.
Sure. And I did it. You have to go upstairs.
What can I expect? Using your money.
Yeah, and don't forget to give it back.
What can you do with a penny?
Don't worry. 5 of them make a nickel. You'd know that if you'd studied your arithmetic.
Okay, teacher.
You better get upstairs before
Mom... boys want me to come downstairs with a broomstick?
Mom, only witches use broomsticks.
Pinky, I'm serious.
I'm coming right now.
You too, Hank.
We matched for it. Pink's got to do it all.
Well, I don't care who does it, but somebody get up here. Double quick.
Pink's coming.
No, don't be so cheerful about it.
Well, go on now before you get us both in trouble.
What's a little trouble? The world's full of it.
Well, listen to the philosopher.
Hi, Dad.
Hey, I didn't hear you come in. Is it still raining?
Buckets. Where's your mother?
Upstairs. Look, Pink, you better get up there.
All right, you two. If you prefer me to come down and get you...
Hey, Mom, wait a minute now.
I'm going right up and take care of everything.
Well, you'd better. And now you, Hank.
We matched to see which one to do it all, and Pink lost.
Hey, what's going on in our happy home anyway?
It's been provoking, Dan. I've been yelling my throat out.
Mom, excuse us, please. We were just horsing around.
Sure, honey. They didn't really mean to upset you.
They shouldn't have left their soggy, wet school clothes all over the upstairs in the first place.
Honest, Mom, we won't do it again.
Well, of course not, and I won't either. Oh, Hank, see what that is, will
you? Yeah.
Here, here's my handkerchief.
I feel like a bantam hen fluttering and flouncing among all you big galoots of men. I've got to lose my temper once in a while to get anybody to pay any attention to me.
It's Grandpa the Barber.
Well, bring him in.
Sure, as soon as we can get him out of his rain things.
What's he doing out in this weather?
Yes. Hazel, I'm glad to find you in.
Everybody's in this kind of weather. What are you doing now?
It's my tooth, Hazel. Let's give him your what for.
You got a toothache?
Father, you mean that dead tooth is hurting you?
Killing me. I want you to come to the dentist with me.
But, Father...
Take him up on it, Hazel. Get him while he's in the mood.
Well, all right. Wait till I get my galoshes and rain things.
Have you made an appointment?
Certainly not. He's the family dentist.
Yes, I know, but even the family dentist might be up to his neck in appointments.
I think I'll go and call him.
Ridiculous. Dentists love to pull out people's teeth.
Yeah, but they want to do it on a day when they got time to enjoy it.
That's too bad, Grandfather.
Let this be a lesson to you, Hank.
Yeah, sure.
Keep your teeth sound and healthy. Never let one of them die in your mouth.
Well, I sure will if I can help it.
Oh.
It sure hurts, doesn't it?
It's killing.
Yes, he says if you come over right away, you'll be able to work in between two cavity patients.
Who wants to be worked in between two cavity patients?
Well, we'll get this dead tooth out of
it. Oh, you've got your raincoat back on. Well, I'm ready. Let's go and do it.
Yes. Oh.
Oh, that's too bad. Does Mother know about this?
She does. She called me an old fool for not having had it pulled long ago.
Well, I'm glad you finally made up your mind. It won't take long. I'll be back pretty soon, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's Margaret.
Hi, Mom. Where are you and Grandfather going?
To the dentist. Ooh, get inside out of the sound for us.
Okay.
Come on in, Button.
Oh, well, I'm sure glad I'm not going to the dentist.
It won't be long.
Bye.
It's all right, Grandfather.
Here, let me help you out of your raincoat, Margaret.
Okay.
That's it.
Let's go to the living room by the fire.
Yeah. Hey, where have you been, Small Fry?
Who's a Small Fry? Who's a Small Fry?
Hey, take it easy.
Dan, you heard him. What's the matter with brothers anyway?
Yes, I heard him. What shall I do, send him to bed without supper?
Hey, not when I'm this hungry.
Everybody's making jokes. It's not a bit funny.
All I did was call you Small Fry.
No, I'm not. How can a girl grow up to be sweet and pure and innocent when her brothers are all the time tearing her down? How can she?
Well, actually, Margaret, brothers are very good for sisters.
No, they're not. They're crude, nasty boys is all they are.
Well, you see, we don't want angels in our family.
Anyway.
Well, we'll save our angelic personalities for the next world. Just now, we want young men and women with flesh and blood and with flesh and blood reactions.
What's that mean?
We want you to be the daughter of the family for the next few years, and then eventually we want you to be someone's wife and then someone's mother.
She'll never make it.
I will too, Hank Barber Herbert.
I doubt it. She'll blow up and bust someday when she gets so mad.
If I didn't have any brothers, I wouldn't. I never get mad except at brothers.
Yes, Hank, that's something for you and Pink to consider.
What's that?
Well, you two are the only ones who ever drive Margaret into a frenzy. Isn't that a little too bad?
Aw, she'll get over it.
No, let's not shrug it off. You're setting a pattern, a way of living in your childhood. The way you feel now about Margaret and the way she feels about you during this period of your lives is very probably the way you're going to feel toward each other all the rest of your lives.
Sure, Dan.
Well, do you want me to hate you all your life?
Aw, that's just kid stuff.
Well, no, yes, but if you irritate Margaret at every opportunity, if she can't see you coming down the street without a fear of what you're going to do or say... Well, then pretty soon she won't even be able to think of you without a sense of frustration and anger. And when that happens, the pattern's set. That's how it'll be all your lives.
We only do it once in a while. And what about Margaret always sticking her nose in our business and hanging her big ears out?
I do not.
Now, on the other hand, Margaret, you are inclined that way.
I am?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. There seems to be an avid curiosity in you concerning any secret.
I'll get it, Dad.
Oh, thank you, Peggy.
Yeah, and then running around telling everybody about it.
But
people are interested.
But that isn't why you do it, Margaret.
Yes, it is, Dad. People like me.
I'm sorry, Margaret, but that's not the real reason. The real reason is that in all of us is the desire, the never-ending urge to show off, to be the center of interest and most important.
I'm not showing off.
Well, that's exactly what you're doing when you tell secrets. You know it first, and people look at you and listen to you. That makes you feel big and grown up and important.
Gee, I didn't know.
Well, I'm sure you didn't. But the next time you have the urge to listen and then run and tattle, you think of that. I'm just doing this to be a show-off, a smarty.
But that's terrible, Dan.
Mm-hmm. It's terrible. And I'll bet anything I have that if you restrain yourself and stop prying and spying on Hank and Pinky, well, they'll stop belittling you and calling you infant.
Will you?
Sure, except you won't stop.
How do you know I won't?
I know girls. They're all the same. They all want to have...
Dan?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, Pinky.
That was Uncle Paul on the telephone. He said he'd like to drop over this evening and talk about the trip to Montana this summer.
Well, good. Tell him to come right now.
I did, but he had Uncle Jack up in his studio. He said he and Uncle Jack would be busy.
Sorry about the telephone interruption, Jack.
Oh, that's okay. Boy, listen to that rain on the roof.
No any better place to hear it.
Listen. Really coming down. Okay, we were talking about thoughts becoming facts. Could you explain that?
I think so.
You know, sometimes I think I'm back in the first grade, just beginning to learn my alphabet.
Is that surprising? You have to start with the alphabet to learn to read a book. Why shouldn't you have to start at the beginning to learn to read your own emotional life?
How to get to know yourself in 10 easy lessons, huh?
No, 10 lessons won't do it. And none of them are easy lessons. You know, don't you, that's the reason the science of psychology and psychiatry have been so slow in being accepted by the majority of people.
Because it's not easy?
Yes. Because it's such a tedious, difficult business for a grown person to search himself out. And when you get right down to it, most people don't want to go too much into themselves. They're afraid of what they'll dig up.
No kidding.
That's true. Most people have an inkling of how mixed up, how appalling their secret lives really are, and they're terrified lest they be made to face themselves in the full light of a psychiatrist's office.
You haven't taken me through any particularly frightening experiences?
Well, they're not frightening, actually. It's only because people are afraid and ashamed that the thought of facing a psychiatrist is so upsetting. And then remember, Jack, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not even a psychologist. I'm just your brother, helping you over some difficult bumps and giving you the most elementary tools to help you search yourself.
Well, they're working.
Well, if they are, that's fine. Now we get back to our subject of thoughts and emotions in children, huh? In the early years of childhood, a child's mental processes are almost entirely emotional. No thinking process at all. A great psychiatrist once told me that when a baby's first born, it has no consciousness whatever, except to pain and hunger.
Not at all?
Not in the beginning. The infant awakens when it's cold or hungry or feels some other physical discomfort. Then it immediately loses consciousness again. Well, it isn't long before the thinking process begins to work. A new baby cries until it's fed. A baby a month old will stop crying the moment you pick it up, because it's begun to think, because it now anticipates being fed. It already realizes that being picked up is the first step to appeasing hunger.
Hey, that's fascinating.
Well, that illustrates the great part our emotions play in our lives, especially childhood. It also shows how impressionable our emotions are. We start out as mewling, sucking infants. The nipple is our whole world in the beginning. The business of sucking is how we get food, how we feel warm and comfortable. No wonder children have to be broken from sucking their thumbs. And is it any wonder that even in maturity we find people still sucking on cigarettes and cigars and pipes?
Skipping and smoking actually is a continuation of a childhood practice?
The pattern of childhood repeated in maturity. That's what I meant by thoughts becoming facts. You impress on a child he's bad when his emotions are pliable and receptive to suggestion, and he's liable to fasten itself on his unconscious for life. Do you impress on a receptive child the fact that he's ugly, not fit to mix with his betters, that he's not very intelligent? He's liable to have an inferiority complex on these matters at the end of his days. Or take the opposite side. If a child is allowed to have his own way, is never criticized or corrected when he does wrong, if the whole family gives way to his whims and praises him and humors him out of reason, that child will grow up with as ugly a personality as the other boy. He'll be a bully, thoughtless of other people's feelings, careless of other people's rights, and could be just as much a social menace as a mistreated child.
Yeah, sure, there's a happy medium, I know. Most parents haven't the faintest idea.
Well, it's simple. If the child gets out of hand, correct him. But the important thing is to make the child know why he's being punished. He must understand that you're not just scolding and fault-finding because you're out of temper. He must understand that wrongful acts bring inevitable punishment. He mustn't think it's a big boy inflicting his will on a little boy. Rather, a judge weighing an issue. He knows an honest judge will praise him for his good deeds as truly as he punishes for bad. That way the child gets a feeling of fair play and looks upon a parent as a strong, secure haven of justice. Actually, children prefer being taken to account when they're wrong. Discipline fairly dealt out gives a child a sense of security. If a parent cares about the child, he wants him to be a good child. The child knows that as well as you and I. And a child who isn't disciplined feels neglected. As he actually... I'm sorry, Jay.
Sure, go ahead.
Hello. Oh, Hazel. Yes. Father? What do you mean he's escaped you? Huh. His tooth again, huh? No, I don't think he's home. I haven't seen anything of him. All right. If I see him, I'll hold him. Yeah, goodbye.
Something about Dan?
He went over to Hazel's with his dead tooth aching and begged her to go to the dentist with him. Hazel got him as far as the waiting room, and after he'd been there a couple of minutes, Dad said he was going down the hall to the men's restroom.
And that's the last Hazel ever saw of him.
Right.
The poor old family dentist.
Foiled again. The villain again escaped with his dead tooth.
One beautiful spring morning this week, Daniel and Nicholas started out for what was supposed to be a stroll.
Daniel, how's the blasted hurry?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nicky. Was it walking fast?
Fast? You'll break into a canter any moment.
You know what it was? At the foot of the hill, you said, spring is a blend of breezes and sneezes.
Well, I'll admit it wasn't very witty, but I didn't mean to make you run away.
What is that word, blend? When you said blend, I thought of the new blend of Chase and Sanborn coffee.
Oh, Jill, I saw you look at your watch.
10:30.
And Claudia always puts the coffee on at 10:30.
But the only thing that could drag me back into the house today is the new Chase and Sanborn.
Well, we have done wonders with it, haven't we?
As Father Barber says, it is the richest, most satisfying coffee I have ever tasted.
Yes, yes, an inspired combination.
And it is, you know it? A stroke of blending genius. I'd like to shake the hand of the coffee blender who thought of it.
Yes, you and a million others all over the country. I say, Dan, come along. Why are you dawdling so?
Hurry up, boys. The Chase and Sanborn is on. No two ways about it. The new Chase and Sanborn is an inspired combination. A glorious new blend of finer coffees. Taste it the first chance you get. Taste the freshness, too. It's all vacuum-packed as soon as it's roasted. It's all the improved blend. Your grocer has no other Chase and Sanborn but this. Ask him for Chase and Sanborn, the amazing new coffee sensation. You have just heard Chapter 6, Book 66 of One Man's Family, written and produced under the direction of Carlton E. Morse for the makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee and Bluebonnet Margarine. Chapter 7, entitled The Special Delivery Letter, will come to you next week at this same hour. The wise homemaker will remember this. It pays to keep it in mind.
Remember the letter FME for flavor, nutrition, economy. Bluebonnet Margarine gives all three. Flavor, nutrition, economy.
And what a wealth of nutrition you get in Bluebonnet. No other spread for bread is richer in food energy, richer in vitamin A the whole year round. No wonder Bluebonnet is so good for growing youngsters, the whole family. For here's what you get in only 3 half-ounce pats of Country Sweet Blue Bonnet. As much food energy as a medium lamb chop. As much precious vitamin A as you get in 3 glasses of milk. Or as much vitamin A as you get in 2 to 3 fresh eggs. Plus vitamin E and other food essentials. Get Blue Bonnet tomorrow, made by the makers of Fleischmann's yeast. This week you save up to 44 cents a pound when you buy Blue Bonnet instead of the expensive spread. And Country Sweet Blue Bonnet is rich in nutrition, rich in energy.
Buy Blue Bonnet, yes, sirree. Flavor, nutrition, economy.
One Man's Family comes to you from California.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.